Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna was pleased to place his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura because Vidura was very meek and gentle. The sage Maitreya was very pleased with Vidura's words, and being influenced by his spirit, he attempted to speak. Translation responsibly. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna was pleased to place his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura because Vidura was very meek and gentle. The sage Maitreya was very pleased with Vidura's words. And being influenced by his spirit, he attempted to speak. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word Sahasra Sirishnaha is very significant. One who has diverse energies and activities and a wonderful brain is known as the Sahasra Sirishnaha. This qualification is applicable only to the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and no one else. The personality of Godhead was pleased to dine sometimes with Vidura at his home, and while resting, he placed his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura. Maitreya was inspired by the thought of Vidura's wonderful fortune. The hairs of his body stood on end, and he was pleased to narrate the topics of the personality of Godhead with great delight. So here, this verse speaks of a pastime which took place and it is described in the Mahabharata in greater detail. So I might just read that section of the Mahabharata. So this is Mahabharata 146. So, and this section of the Mahabharata describes that at Hastinapura, when Krishna went to request peace, Duryodhana offered opulent dishes, but Krishna dined with Vidura and placed his feet upon Vidura's lap as they spoke. Krishna is on a peace mission. They all rose to greet Krishna as he entered the hall. Duryodhana came down from his elevated seat and welcomed Krishna warmly. He showed him to a large throne covered with an exquisite silk carpet and soft white cushions. When Krishna was seated, he personally worshipped him and offered, so Duryodhana is worshipping Krishna, and offered him the traditional gift of a cow. His brothers also came and worshipped Krishna along with the other kings. When the rites were complete, Duryodhana folded his palms and said, "We are honoured, O Govinda. What can we do for you? You may consider this wide kingdom and our wealth yours. Please be gracious and accept an invitation to dine with us. We have prepared Dushishan's palace for your residence. which is superior even to my own. I will not eat with you, O hero, nor shall I stay in Dushasana's palace. Duryodhana smiled and spoke with forced humility. Why do you refuse our invitation, O Janardhan? Are we not as dear to you as the Pandavas? Surely you see both parties equally. Your relationship with Dhritarashtra is as close as your relationship with the Pandavas, O Madhava. Please tell me why you do not accept our hospitality. Only those messengers who have gained their objectives should accept the hospitality offered by those who have received his message. He raised his long arm and held out his palm toward Duryodhana. After you have fulfilled my wish, you may entertain both myself and my followers. So it's a... remember that Tamal Krishna Maharaj tended to have a policy that when he was preaching, especially amongst some of the Indian families who were trying to, you know, perhaps get them to donate to a particular temple or a life membership somehow or another to make some significant contribution to ISKCON and the preaching. He had a policy generally that he wouldn't eat until they had actually offered what he had gone there to get. So, and he found that generally, if he went to their homes and they offered food or gifts, that in essence they felt that they had offered a good welcome and they'd made an offering to the sadhu and now he was pleased and therefore basically you shouldn't ask for anything more. So he wouldn't, he had a policy to avoid eating or accepting any gifts or even small donations until he actually achieved what he felt that was appropriate for them to offer. So Krishna's employing a similar strategy here. So Krishna is saying, after you have fulfilled my wish, you may entertain both myself and my followers. Struggling to control his anger, Duryodhana replied. So we see that here, externally, Duryodhana is being gentle and meek, but internally, there's a raging fury building. Duryodhana replied, "It is not befitting that you treat us so, O Madhusudana. Whether your objects are achieved or not, we are bent upon pleasing you with our hospitality. You have denied us that opportunity with no good reason, O best of men. We feel no enmity toward you and therefore cannot understand why you snub us in this way." Krishna was grave. "I never abandon virtue from motives of desire, anger, hate, or attachment. One should eat another's food if there is love between them or if he is in distress. O King, you do not please me and I am not in distress. For no reason you have borne malice toward the Pandavas from their childhood. Your cousins are virtuous and are devoted to the good of all beings. Whoever bears malice for such blameless men bears malice toward me. He who follows the virtuous follows me. Know that I am merged in the Pandavas and cannot be separated from them. And we see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says a similar thing for all devotees, that one who always thinks of me, Krishna is within them and they are within him. So that same principle applies to all those who come in the line of Arjuna and the Pandavas. Krishna looked intently, but without anger, at Duryodhana, who frowned. O Bharat, whoever becomes antagonistic toward a virtuous man impelled by lust or anger should be known as the vilest of men. He does not keep his prosperity for long. On the other hand, he who wins over virtuous men with services and kind words, even though they may not be dear to him, gains great renown in the world. Your food is defiled by wickedness. I will not eat it. I prefer instead to stay with Vidura and eat his food. So we see here also that the food, one way of associating with a person is through the food that one eats. That is one way of associating. There's some instance, I can't remember all the details of it, but there was one grihastha who was discussing with Guru Kishore and Dasan Babaji. And there was some discussion on renunciation, and the husband was saying that he hadn't really been associating with his wife, and Guru Kishore and Das Babaji differed, saying that you have been associating with your wife because you've been eating the cooking that they have brought. So it's just the same, that association. And of course, which is a good point for the, especially for the brahmacharis, the brahmacharinis, let me speak of the sannyasis, that association can be very subtle. And yet quite significant. And generally the those who are either permanently or for some time avoiding association with the opposite sex in order to maintain their ashram, they do have to be very, very careful of the subtle aspects of association, accepting service, and so sometimes association can be very subtle, and one has to appreciate that sometimes from the very subtle association, gradually the full influence of the person one is associating with one has a significant effect life. And of course also in preaching that when going to people's homes for preaching you know, one has to understand that the food that one is sometimes the host like to offer food to the devotees, and one has to be very careful. At the same time, you know, one has to balance the effect of preaching that, you know, when you go to someone's home and you say, look, I'm not going to eat your food. It's, you know, especially for, you know, people with very strong traditions, it's quite a strong insult, you know. It's very damaging to the relationship. There's a little bit of a risk there. And Srila Prabhupada generally, you know, when he was going to different persons' homes, he would eat very little, you know, just a little like that, and then he would allow his disciples to eat heartily. But yeah, one has to be careful. One has to always understand that these different aspects of association can overpower one's devotional service quite significantly. And of course that's why, as devotees, we have a you know, what's called the ISKCON sandwich, which is, you know, the morning program where we rise, purify ourselves fully by worshipping the spiritual master and Shishi Gaunatai, Shishi Radhavallabha, Jagannathallabha, Subhadra, the Shilas, and associating with the devotees, and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, eating prasadam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. These things are very, very powerful. They purify one and then gives one a great strength to go out and give association without being affected by association. So the stronger one is in one's Krishna consciousness, then one can give association rather than become you know, affected by others' association, which can be, you know, coming from a material aspect. And then after a day's activities, whether one is distributing books or working in the office, you know, with people associated or at home associated, then there is the evening program where the devotees, again, they bathe and put on some nice devotional clothes, tangura aarti, have kirtan, take some prasadam, associate with the devotees. They might hear, again, a little bit of Krishna Katha and the association of devotees, and like that. So then that's the ISKCON sandwich. Keeps one very, very fixed up. So whatever, you know, contamination may be there in the course of the day, then it's purified. One goes to sleep, dreams about Krishna, spiritual master, devotees, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and wakes up inspired, ready for the next day. Like that. Prabhupada's ISKCON sandwich. Although we don't do that, you know, the we don't do that as much, and you know, the evening program is a lot different to what it was previously. Previously, the morning program, the evening program, pretty much equal. Everyone was there in the morning, everyone was there in the evening. Because it was, you know, a different circumstance in that we're dealing now with, we have a lot of congregational members who may be able to, you know, come in the morning, but not necessarily in the evening. But because the some temples, the evening program is not as strong as it used to be, For a lot of devotees, that has become the norm. Right? In other words, for a lot of devotees, since they've been associated with ISKCON, they've never really seen a strong, regular evening program, and may not realize, actually, that it's just as significant as the morning program, if not more. And so, therefore, that evening program, should be there in the home or in the temple. That. But it's very, very important, just as important as what we're doing now. And in Australia, because a lot of devotees probably don't realise the sequence of events, but we used to go out, do sankirtan from about 9 o'clock to about 5 o'clock. Then we used to distribute some books to the huge traffic and a lot of people going home. So we distribute some books. So we used to sometimes we distribute books in the morning to the morning traffic of people and cars, and in the evening we distribute books, and then we'd go back to the temple, have a shower, or have a shower, go to the Aarti Bhagavad Gita class. Everyone was in the same sort of Srimad Bhagavatam. The big kirtan, Guru Nitya was really nice, especially after a day of preaching and doing so many things. It was very nice. All the devotees could describe all the different events that happened to them and like that in the course of the sankirtan. And then after Gita, we would all have hot milk together, which I noticed they do that down at the Bhakti Bhavan. Whenever I go there, they have the hot milk after the program. But every night was hot milk. And most temples, if you went from Melbourne, Sydney, you go down, so you'd see all the devotees, in the courtyards, what have you, having hot milk, and so they had a big... So that was regular, 365 days a year, every day of that. And it certainly made, gave a really fired up congregation of devotees. But what happened was, after some time, the paraphernalia changed from things that we would sell to the shops during the day, and especially when we changed the paintings, it was something that was actually better sold in the evening. And because of that, especially most of the sankirtan devotees in those days, who were, it was a big drive for collecting Lakshmi, liberating Lakshmi, if you say, or doing the pit. And because most of the fired up devotees were therefore not in the 7 o'clock aarti, and they were out doing sankirtan, gradually over some time, in many of the temples, the evening program disappeared to this very day. Devotees sort of may think that that is a norm with that evening program, so take or leave it. But actually, if you weren't, just like now, if someone's generally, regularly coming to the temple and not at the morning program, people are, oh, they didn't come this day. But same with the evening program. It's like, what happened? So, So this association, Krishna is showing. So, so leaving Duryodhan fuming, Krishna left the hall and returned to Vidura's house. All the Kuru elders visited him there. They each offered him their own abodes, but Krishna thanked them and replied, "I am honoured by the offer, but I am content to stay with Vidura." Krishna and Satyaki, so that's Krishna's chariot driver, happily ate whatever food was prepared by Vidura's wife after first offering a portion to the brahmanas. There you go, there's another noticed when they had birthdays that when they had the children's birthdays, they would explain to the children, okay. For the adults, it wasn't really done in ISKCON. Birthdays, we never really did. It's sort of a new thing now. But anyway, they make the cake, and I noticed the mothers cut the first bit, cake's offered, but they like to put it in the mouth of the child, and then they distribute it to the brahmanas, which is teaching all the children the wrong thing. They should, if there's a senior brahmana there, or brahmani, they should cut the cake, they should give some to the brahmana, they should let him eat it, and then distribute it like that. Especially to other brahmanas. Sometimes what I see is even when they give the cake to the brahmana, because someone may have said, give it to the brahmana or the brahmani, and so they give it, and before the brahmana eats it, they've shoved some into the kid's mouth. this is where the Mahabharata, although Mahabharata, Ramayana, very, very good for the devotees to read, because they really fill out the culture. All the details of culture are there. Sometimes we look at them as maybe inferior to Bhagavatam or what have you, but they're extremely important books. So, when the meal was over, Vidura said, Duryodhana does not much appreciate your visit. O Keshava, that wicked-minded fool transgresses all religious codes. He is incapable of accepting good advice and is bound for destruction. In his opinion, he is wise, but he follows nothing other than his own desires. He is an enemy even to his friends. Having abandoned virtue, he is fond of untruth and is simply a slave to his senses. He will certainly ignore your advice. As Vidura spoke, his wife came into the room and offered Krishna herbs and fragrant spices to purify his mouth after eating. She lit incense and took up a chamara whisk to fan Krishna. He smiled at her and told her to sit with her husband. Duryodhana has full confidence in Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, Ashwatthama and Jayadrath. With his armies at the ready, he does not even think of peace. He thinks the Pandavas will not be able to even look upon his forces. Lacking all intelligence, he has firmly resolved to return nothing to the Pandavas. Vidura did not like the idea of Krishna going into the Kauravas assembly. He knew that he would only be insulted and even abused. So it appears that Vidura has been quite strongly critical, but he's really trying to prevent Krishna from being placed in an unpleasant situation. That's why there's a lot of strength to his, here we describe he's very meek and gentle. But look how strongly he's speaking. So sometimes we get the wrong impression of what is meek and gentle. When it comes to Krishna's interest or the interest of devotees, meek and gentle means being even very ruthless in their service, always remaining the humble servant. That is meek and humble. Otherwise, it's a false display of meek and humility like Duryodhana. In this pastime, if you read it, you could think, well, Duryodhana's being meek and humble, but Vidura's being quite aggressive. like that. So, but the real principle of humility is remaining the servant of Krishna and his devotees. And one who steps out of that platform has immediately become proud and envious, even though they appear more meek and humble than the devotee. Duryodhana suspects your motives, Vidura continued as he pressed Krishna's feet. He will by no means listen to your submission. Surrounded by his chariots and elephants, he feels invincible. He now considers the kingdom to be his and his alone. He thinks that you are biased towards the Pandavas. Many of the kings following him are already your enemies. Out of fear of you, they have joined with Duryodhana. All of them are delighted at the prospect of fighting the Pandavas. How can you go into the midst, a crusher of the enemies? Although I know your true position, power and invincibility, still, I cannot see the purpose of you going there simply to be ignored. I speak only out of love, reverence and friendship. My Lord, what is the use of describing the joy I feel upon seeing you? You are the supreme soul and the very life of all beings. Krishna reached over and clasped Vidura's hand. You have spoken with wisdom. You have spoken as a friend should speak to a friend. Your words are conducive to morality and worldly good, like the advice of a father or mother. What you said is true, but listen to my reasons for coming here. Knowing full well of Duryodhana's hostility and wickedness, I have come here to do something virtuous. He who liberates these men from the clutches of death will earn great religious merit. The wise have said that if one attempts a virtuous act with all his power but fails, he will still receive the merit of that act. That's the mood of the preacher. Therefore, with all sincerity, I will seek to establish peace. This calamity has its roots in the Kurus, for it has been brought about by Duryodhana and Karna. Krishna rose from his seat and walked slowly across the room, his gold ornaments and jewels glinting in the light of the altar lamps. If one does not try to save a friend from impending calamity, then he cannot be called a friend. A friend should pull one away from acting improperly, even if it means seizing him by the hair. Therefore, it behooves me to try to dissuade Duryodhana from his purposes. If he disregards me, at least I will feel that I did all a friend could do. If the fool does not accept my advice, then he will have only himself to blame for his consequences. Nor will men blame me for having failed to effect peace. If, without sacrificing the Pandavas' interests, I can bring about peace between the cousins, then I will have done good to both parties. Otherwise, not even all the rulers of the world can stand against me any more than small animals can stand against an enraged lion. So though Krishna could have just crushed Duryodhana and everyone, as a friend, he didn't, and he just tried to talk him out of that. So there's no way Krishna can be described as just looking after the Pandavas' interests like that, as Duryodhana accused him. Krishna spoke with Vidura through most of the night. They rested briefly. So as we described here, when Krishna rested, he, in Bhagavatam describes, he placed his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura. So Krishna spoke with Vidura. Then as dawn approached, bards assembled outside Vidura's house and recited hymns from the Samaveda to the accompaniment of cymbals, drums and conch shells. Krishna rose immediately upon hearing the sound. He performed his morning ablutions and went through his usual morning rituals, chanting incarnations to the fire god and worshipping the sun as it rose. Even as he performed his morning devotions, Duryodhana and Shakuni came to see him with folded palms. They informed him that Dhritarashtra and the other Kurus were in the assembly hall. They are awaiting you even as the gods in heaven await Indra. Krishna replied that he would soon be ready, and Duryodhana said he would wait outside. After he and Shakuni had gone, Krishna distributed charity to the brahmanas from the many chariots filled with riches he had brought with him to distribute. He gave gold, gems, and fine cloth to numerous brahmins. Then prepared himself to go to the Kuru assembly. Daruka fetched his chariot and it approached Vidura's house with a deep rumble. After circumambulating the sacred fire of the Brahmins, Krishna left the house. Krishna, Satyaki, and Vidura mounted the chariot and it moved off. So I'll just leave it there. Anyone has any questions or comments? That's the last time we've. Even though Duryodhana offered very opulent dishes, but Krishna dined with Vidura, because Krishna will not accept devotional service from those who are envious of his devotees. That's the principle there. But even there may not be a very strong relationship between, a devotee, if one still offers that person service with meekness and humility, Krishna becomes very, very attracted to that devotee. That's the principle. I always found time to read. What I used to do was, because I joined here, the next day I left a Ramaswamy's bus and we travelled on the Hare Krishna bus, went to West Australia. 6 weeks later I ended up in Woolloombar, where I was initiated, gradually came back to Sydney and then came back to Melbourne, then went over to Perth. But even from the very on the bus, we also had a morning program exactly as you do in the temple. We had an evening program exactly as you do in the temple, and we also had a lunchtime program where we used to have a little kirtan, read from the Nectar Devotion, and like that. So we had morning, lunch and evening program. During the day, so we were rising very early for Mangalarti, and of course, there was cooking of the meal, which was done on the bus. Full day of sankirtan, come home, and evening meal. So it was a full program. But what I used to do was, I would try to chant my rounds very attentively, so that, between about 5 and 7 minutes, I would chant, making sure that I chanted each mantra, which can give you about half an hour. I notice that, devotees are not being attentive, and they may lose half an hour. And so before breakfast, usually I would take that opportunity that I made up during the rounds and, not just standing around shooting the breeze and, like that. They had a full set of Bhagavatams, because in those days it was up to Canto 10, Chapter 14, Prabhupada's books, and I used to read Bhagavatam in the morning. And then if we came back for lunch, again, I perhaps would read a little bit before lunch. I would usually eat my meals quite quickly. Meal time is a time where quite often people sit there and they'll have a meal and then, take the extra half an hour if they've got it and have a chat. So I would just eat quickly and then I would do a little reading after that. I tried as far as possible to always carry a book with me. So even if I was out on Sankirtan, especially when the little pocketbooks come in after some years, they were just such a godsend, literally. And then, of course, in the evening, where there's more time, then I would try and read something after the evening meal as well. Didn't often read much at the end of the day because we used to have such a huge meal, and followed by, two or three big cups of hot milk, that, after that, all I could manage was literally to just find my sleeping bag. We'd lay outside, because a couple of devotees slept on the bus, the rest of us slept out on the ground outside. You put your sleeping bag out there and you'd look up at the stars, and the stars would be spinning around. You'd be thinking, this Krishna consciousness is far out, And you just go off to sleep. Sometimes devotees have asked the question, how did you undergo the difficulties in those days? But, in all honesty, when you eat that much prasadam and followed by, three big, enamel cups of hot milk, you don't know there's anything. And if you've been up since very early in the morning and you've just been active all day, you just lay down. Wouldn't matter how cold it was, things biting you, snakes crawling over you, rain, you just go to sleep. It wasn't as bad as I've seen. But I followed that. Every day. So within 9 months of being a devotee, I had read the full Bhagavatam, and I used to read each verse aloud and the translations, and then I'd read the purport. So in those days, we had up to Canto 10, Chapter 14. Within 9 months, I had read every single verse, probably studied that. I used to make it I used to try each year to read Srimad Bhagavatam, next year read Chaitanya Charitamrita, read An Empty Devotion and all the other books, and then come back to the Bhagavatam like that. But so it was just finding those little places. Yeah.
By your comment, this episode between the Yoda and Lord Krishna, we read Tier 3, Class 3. This is a very important topic. It shows how much Krishna loves his devotees and how much he hated. That's what he's saying. So many, Lord Krishna just rejected all the preparations from the Yudhisthira.
Yes.
And took only Sahab, little Sahab, in Yudhisthira.
Yes. But that's right. But what's really interesting here is how Krishna is actually equal to everyone, and that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, and we saw that in the pastime previous chapter we were discussing Lord Brahma, that Krishna is just so eager to develop that friendship with us. Sometimes we have an unnecessary anxiety that somehow we've been left out and Krishna's not thinking of me, but look how much trouble Krishna's personally going to for Duryodhan, prepared to be insulted, he's going to just give it the best shot. So if we're really endeavouring, chanting Hare Krishna daily and trying to serve, and especially if we're being devotees meek and humble and associating with each other, with devotees in a very, offenseless way, you can guarantee that, Krishna is your dear friend, and he is. There may appear that Krishna is not awarding this or not awarding that, but because he is like a father, like a friend, he knows that, some things he should hold back from a certain devotee and it's better for them. Some things he gives them, sometimes he makes them wait for some time, but it's all being done, and we should always see Krishna like that, he is giving me exactly what I need as a kind friend. And when we see like that, that's Krishna consciousness, and we have a much better worldview. When we don't have that Krishna consciousness, we tend to start blaming. Oh, you know, it's because of this one, you know, that, you know, I would have had this, and, you know, this would have happened to me, except for that already there. So, you know, that's the opposite.
Krishna was the best friend.
Yes. That's Krishna consciousness. And when that's there, one doesn't have there's no reason to criticize other devotee. If one understands, Krishna, my dear friend, is totally, he's so kind, you know, that, you know, there's no problem with my life, and there's certainly no reason why I should, you know, be critical or harsh to Krishna's devotees like that. There's no reason. And everything is there. That stems from a lack of faith in Krishna. Desireless?
Desireless mind. He loves Krishna. That person loves Krishna, but he doesn't want anything from happy.
Yeah, it's not quite possible to be desireless. We can be desireless in the sense, as it mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, that we don't desire sense gratification. Now, Krishna describes to Arjuna that one who's actually Krishna conscious, or in the transcendental state of mind, they have given up all desires for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction. But here we see Vidura, he had a very strong desire. He had a very strong desire for Krishna's happiness. And he wanted to try to, you know, make all arrangements that Krishna would not be put in even an uncomfortable position. Even though he knew, you're the Supreme Lord, but that's love. See? Just like, you know, we know that the deities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but out of love, we look after the deities as if the deities can't look after themselves. Like that. You know, you sort of think, you know, who will cook, you know, if like that, and who will dress the deities, you know, everything is nicely organized. That anxiety for Krishna is true desirelessness. And what Krishna describes, if we don't have those desires for Krishna, then the heart will be filled with desires for related to the material energy. There's no question of the soul being desireless, because the very nature of the soul is conscious, and there is an eternal loving relationship, and the soul is blissful by nature, and therefore always seeking bliss. So therefore, because the soul is blissful by nature, that bliss, that unlimited, all-expanding bliss, forms desires in relationship to love of God. And in the material world, when one is not experiencing the higher taste, then that desire for happiness, which is the nature of the soul, must come through the material energy rather than the spiritual energy. So there's no question of desireless. But desireless means no desire for sense gratification, but unlimited desires to serve Krishna. That's real desirelessness. To please Krishna, yeah. And his devotees. Yeah. Someone else? Okay. No. Sorry, all worship of God.